Support for the KNKX Studio Sessions comes from People's Bank, working with businesses and families to achieve their financial goals since 1921. People's Bank provides personal banking, business services, and home lending from 25 Western Washington locations. Info at peoplesbank-wa.com. People's Bank is an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
I'm delighted to be here for our second studio session this week, and we're going to start things out with some great music. Please welcome the Steve Griggs Ensemble. The Steve Griggs Ensemble, Steve Griggs on tenor sax, and Jay Thomas on alto sax and trumpet and flugelhorn, Milo Peterson on drums, Phil Sparks on bass, and the great Susan Pascal on vibes. So glad to have you here, Steve. Thanks so much for bringing the band in.
Thanks for inviting us. We're so happy to be here.
Tell us about the tune that you just played.
Well, that was the title, Joseph Brazil. It was the title of our new CD just out this week, A Cup of Joe Brazil, about the famous Detroit saxophonist who traveled here in 1961 and ended up introducing the black music curriculum at the University of Washington.
That's great. See, I'm a Detroiter. I recognized his name from Detroit music history, but I had no idea that he actually came out here. So,
yeah,
quite a story, I understand.
Well, like a lot of Detroit musicians, he worked in auto manufacturing. Mm-hmm. He worked at the Chrysler Missile Plant. He worked at the Detroit Tank Arsenal. And then when that work started to die off at the end of the 50s, he got a job at Boeing, and he was a tool die maker at Boeing. And so that's what brought him out here. And then Century 21, the Seattle World's Fair, was going on at the time, and so he got some gigs playing in the food court at the Century 21. And I interviewed Marius Nordahl, the piano player. He played on those gigs. And so, he played music in Seattle from 1961 on till... I guess he moved to Tacoma maybe in the 80s. So, okay. Yeah. Right. So that song was just inspired by his story. I never got the chance to meet Joe. He passed in 2008. And so I've been collecting stories about him. I'm working on his biography. So if there's any listeners out there that have stories about Joe Brazil, please look me up. I have a blog, Joe Brazil Project at blogspot.com. And you can read my research, and I'm really happy to share Joe's story because he has lots of lessons for us. He was never sought out the spotlight. He doesn't have a recorded discography. He was on John Coltrane's record Ohm, but he was on a Roy Ayers record, but he didn't seek the spotlight. He cultivated the scene. He had in his basement in Detroit. He had a piano there and had jam sessions that started usually 2 or 3 in the morning. Everyone in Detroit had to leave Barry Harris's house at midnight because his mom had to get up at 6. So Barry Harris's mom said, everybody out. And and so people would go to Joe Brazil's house around 2 or 3 and then play till 9 or 10 the next morning, but when they had to go back to work. So, the famous jam sessions. And I actually got to meet, I went back to Detroit, Joe Brazil's neighbor, who was like 8 years old at the time when Joe was living there, looked me up. And then he hosted me and took me around. We saw Joe's old house in Detroit. And and he introduced me to another guy, Felton Jones, is a trumpet player in Detroit. And I got to sit in down at Burt's. There's in the market area. There's a great ribs place and jazz club. And this guy John Douglas, shout out to John Douglas. He's a trumpet player. Has been playing Detroit at Burt's for 30 years or something. Friday night. So if you're ever in Detroit on a Friday, go down to Burt's and say hi to John Douglas. So
wow, sounds like you do immaculate research. I have to say, Steve is also a really wonderful writer, and I especially enjoy your profiles of musicians that you've written for Earshot Jazz Magazine and a number of other things. So
my pleasure.
Yeah,
we have such a vibrant scene here.
Yeah, I know, and it's wonderful that someone like you is able to document it.
Thank you.
Great. Tell us about this ensemble does more than just the Joe Brazil Project. There's the Panama Hotel and a number of other things that you're doing. This whole concept of Listen to Seattle, why don't you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, it started with this Panama Hotel project. When I, Four Culture has a historic site-specific project where artists can do site-specific work in historic locations, and the Panama Hotel was one of those. And I got really excited because I had read the book Hotel in the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, which is set in that place, and it mentions Oscar Holden, who is the patriarch of Seattle jazz, and So I ended up doing a lot of research and I started learning all about Seattle's racist history. And, so that really, resonated with me. And so I have a program not only about the Panama Hotel show, which we're going to play some pieces from, which is inspired by Japanese American incarceration during World War II, which is very important now, as some of the people in the incoming administration are saying that was a precedent for Muslim registry, which I disagree with. And so I also started learning about the racism against the indigenous people here and how the Duwamish tribe still are not recognized as a federal tribe, recognized by the federal government, even though Chief Seattle, the chief of the Duwamish was the first to sign the treaty at Medicine Creek in 1855. And even though they were promised a reservation and schooling and medicine, they never got any of that. So those are the kind of programs I like to do, social justice in Seattle, and then blend it with music. We also do a show about James Washington, who's a sculptor from the central area. And I was reading his unpublished autobiography that he has in his basement there at the James Washington Foundation. And it turns out when he was six, his father was a Baptist minister who had to leave town in Gloucester, Mississippi, because the Ku Klux Klan was after him. He never saw his father again. These stories are all around us, and it's important that I want to give voice to them.
Yes.
I want to put my music in service to those stories, those voices that are not heard by the powerful. So that's why I do these programs.
I think that's marvelous. It really is. Let's hear something from Panama Hotel Jazz.
Okay, this is a song called Densho. Densho is a Japanese word for legacy. And there's an organization here in town run by Tom Ikeda and some other people. It just celebrated its 20th anniversary. And if you go to densho.org, you can see oral histories, video recordings of camp survivors from Japanese Americans. And he's recorded, I think, over 900 so far and going.
Wow.
And so we played actually at the 20th anniversary celebration, and there was a letter from President Obama lauding the organization for what it does. And so so this is a piece called Densho.
Thank you.
Beautiful. The Steve Griggs Ensemble, live studio session on 88.5 KNKX, connecting you to jazz, blues, and NPR news. Thanks so much for that. That was absolutely beautiful. Now, you're going to be performing again at the Panama Hotel, right?
Yes. We're every second Saturday of the month through February, so that means tomorrow.
Yes, it does.
2 o'clock, we'll be there, and the show lasts about 75 minutes, and it's stories and music, so there is a narrative arc, so I encourage people, if they're interested, to come get a seat, grab a seat before 2 o'clock, and the tea room also has teas and sandwiches and coffees and biscotti and mochi, so come on down the Panama Hotel at 6th and Main. It's the center of Japantown, and it's still an operating museum, so you can stay there.
Wow.
The current owner, Jan Johnson, has agreed with Takashi Hori, who sold it to her, that she wouldn't change it. And so in the rooms, there are no closets, but there are wardrobes made out of old refrigerator shipping crates.
Oh, my. So
I encourage you to go down. The office is up on the second floor, so you have to walk up. There's no elevator. It's a beautiful old building, and there's lots of stories that the walls contain there. Okay. So I encourage you to come out. It just feels so great. We've been playing there for almost 3 years now, and so we keep changing the music a little bit. The story has evolved. I used to be giving lots of facts in the past, and now it's evolved. It's about a character, a guy named Shinobu. Shinobu is a Japanese word for endurance, and so we tell the story of Shinobu, who was born in Japan. He was not the firstborn son, so he couldn't inherit the farm. So he sought his riches elsewhere, and he came to Seattle, and right around when the Panama Hotel opened in 1909.
Wow.
And so I think I've speculated on why it's called the Panama Hotel. And in 1909, the Panama Canal was being built, and Seattle was getting ready.
Yeah.
They had the Alaska-Yukon Pacific to say, we're open for business.
Mm-hmm.
They realized the railroads owned all of the waterfront property, so they needed to open a shipping port. So they created Harbor Island by sluicing down Jackson Street.
Right.
And so then the Port of Seattle was born. And so it was all around trying to encourage commerce through the Panama Canal. And I imagine that, a new hotel opened up. Hey, we're going to be serving the port. Let's call it the Panama Hotel. So I don't know the true story, but that's my story.
It works.
It was designed by us, the first practicing Japanese architect in Seattle, a guy named Sabra Ozasa. And he's built several buildings all over the world. And in the basement is the only intact Japanese public bath remaining in the United States. And it's not open to the public right now, but the Japanese word for that is sento. And there used to be many of them in the International District. And now this is the only one left in the whole United States. So come on down. There's lots of history to rub elbows with, rub shoulders with.
Yeah.
Paul Kikuchi, I think, still has an installation there. He's a percussionist. And his father was a Japanese farmer, and so he brought in an old record player, and you can play Paul Kikuchi's father's 78 Japanese records.
Oh,
and
wow.
So to hear that music in that place is really special.
Oh,
so
that's
wonderful. That's available for the public. So that's through For Culture project.
Okay, well, let's talk about another project you've got coming up. You'll be at a community festival being held by Tacoma Art Museum in January, and it's in conjunction with their exhibit, 30 Americans. What are you going to do for that?
Well, there was a call for artists to participate, to do something related to the show that's there, and so I looked through who's going to be exhibited, and Jean-Michel Basquiat is going to have some paintings, and I know he was very inspired by jazz. He actually painted discographies of Charlie Parker and Miles Davis, and even did a picture of the record that Now's the Time is on, and he did one called Charles the First, and Charlie Parker, when he was at the Stanhope Hotel. So jazz was a big inspiration for him. So I decided to use those paintings as the set list. So we're going to be playing old bebop standards. I will have arranged them, so they'll have a little a different flair to them. Mm-hmm. But and we're going to invite Nathan Breedlove, okay. trumpeter, to join us. So we'll have three horns in the front. And that's free on January 8th from 1 to 2. And I think the community festival goes from 10 in the morning till 5 at night. Right. So there's activities all day. And so, yeah, come on down to Tacoma on January 8th. We'll be excited to play down there.
We'll be
and,
there.
I'm gonna. I offered to bring some of my Charlie Parker vinyl and things like that so you can see the real deal, mm-hmm. where the inspiration
great.
Came from.
That's great. Okay, this ensemble actually has won an award, the ASCAP Chamber Music America Award for Adventurous Programming of Contemporary Music. Congratulations.
Yeah, we've actually won it twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So that was fun. The first time... I the scheduling wasn't good, so I couldn't go get the award mm-hmm. in New York in January. But the last time we won it, I was able to go and receive the award in person. And actually, the Westerlies were out there performing in the showcase, so got to see all the Garfield and Roosevelt High School grads who are tearing up New York now.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it was fun to see the Seattle musicians doing so well in the capital of jazz.
And well done to you and your ensemble, too.
Thank
that's,
you so
that's
much.
That's really wonderful. Let's have another tune from Panama Jazz.
Okay, we're going to play a song. It's called Loyalty, and it comes from a section in the story when Shinobu and his family are in a concentration camp, and the United States... started to think that maybe not everybody of Japanese ancestry was a threat to the United States. So it came up with a questionnaire, uh-huh. kind of like a Muslim registry or asking if you're Muslim. And so they administered this to every inmate over 17 years old. And there were lots of questions. And when they gave people the questionnaires, they weren't told what would happen with their responses, what mm-hmm. what the consequences of their answers would be. So it was really concerning. And two of the questions were, would you serve in the U.S. military, the same military that had taken them away from their homes and was pointing armed machine guns at them from guard towers? And obviously some did pay the ultimate sacrifice. They joined the 442nd Battalion and fought in Italy. On behalf of the United States, but some did not. And the other question was, will you forswear allegiance to the United States, to the emperor, Japanese emperor, and pledge allegiance to the United States? Well, after the Civil War, the law was changed so that only people from Europe and Africa could become citizens of the United States. So that excluded Asians. So Asian-born people could not become U.S. citizens until the 50s. And so the Japanese-born, like Shinobu in our story, was concerned that if he gave up his citizenship in Japan, he couldn't be a citizen in the United States, so he would be stateless. And his American-born children... they could, and so if he answered differently than his children, he didn't know would the family be separated. So this causes Shinobu to sit down and think and ask himself a question. How can I pledge allegiance to a government that denies citizenship to immigrants, it restricts civil rights based on race, assumes guilt by association, and incarcerates citizens without charging them with a crime? And so I wrote that inspired this song, Loyalty. We'll be right back.